What's up, everybody? This is episode 41 of the ClapperCast. This is February 17th, 2020. I'm Burke.
And I'm Sean.
And let's crack into it here, Sean. We have a lot to cover today. It's been an eventful week. Let's start off with another head coach being fired. So Bruce Boudreau of the formerly of the Minnesota Wild got fired after going 7-1-2 in his last 10 games with the club.
7-2-1.
Oh, okay.
It's an important distinction.
Still a good record.
Yeah, after going 7-2-1, they lost. It was after they lost that game against New York too that the shootout goal was controversial. So it wasn't even like a definitive blowout loss or anything. It was a close game. So and then Bill Guerin just said that it's teams in a playoff push and he needs to get more out of people, which is also kind of surprising considering they just traded their identity player, acting like they're in a rebuild.
They just traded Zucker away and got some picks and oh, we're
Yeah,
actually in a
so
playoff push now. Team's
mixed messages
not
there from
doing well
Bill.
enough. Having won 7-2-1 in the last 10, that's not good enough to make playoffs, I guess.
No, you got to be 11-0-0 in 10 games.
Yeah. They were how many points back of a playoff spot?
They used to be three. Let's double check.
I think yeah, they were three when he got fired.
Yeah, they were 3 points back when he got fired, and they're actually 7 points back now. Damn, things change. Yeah, they're actually 5-4-1, so they've lost a couple since then.
Yeah, I think that writing's been on the wall a little bit for Bruce for a while in Minnesota, but
Yes.
I think that he's kind of suffering from the GM making questionable moves and he's actually had a pretty good on-ice product while he's
Yeah,
been there.
that's what I was kind of looking into a little bit after, is that he's actually, for all the credit he gets as like an offensive-minded coach with the teams he's coached, he's actually created one of the best defensive systems in Montreal in Minnesota, considering the team that's been iced in front of them. They've actually just been suffering from below average goaltending.
Yes, the
That
goaltending has been a real problem there.
Which is surprising considering how good Devan Dubnyk had been for years, that he just kind of fell off the face of the earth. Also been dealing with injury issues.
His
But
best years were before Bruce got there, I believe.
that sounds right. That sounds accurate. Yeah. So he's been a bit of a decline, kind of built or continuing on off his reputation over a few years prior. But I think the key indicator was that the Wild had been giving up the easiest shots in the league or something like that. But they had still been poorly performing on the ice because of below average goaltending.
Yeah, and this is a team that was stripped of Granlund, stripped of Niederreiter, stripped of Zucker in the last,
Yeah.
year and a bit. It's just kind of ridiculous that, the coach is fired. I mean, it makes sense that he was fired, but not for the reasoning that they gave.
No. Yeah, I mean, he was honestly going into the season, he was my number one candidate for a coach who got fired. The only reason I didn't think he was going to is because he only had that 1 year left in the coaching part of it. Turns out he had 2 more years as a consultant after this, but I thought they would at least ride out the coaching part of it and then just start the rebuild next year, rather than just have like a random 2 months of, I guess they want a test run for an interim coach or something.
Weird timing, but not very shocking, Like it's just
Yeah.
like you said, you had him pegged before the season began for him to get fired. With how the team was going, I would have thought he would have been fired earlier in the season when they were struggling a little bit more, not when they've kind of turned it around and been a little bit hot. I mean, maybe that's because of some overperformances by guys like Kevin Fiala, but.
Does Paul Fentanel look like a genius for Kevin Fiala?
I don't know. I don't think three games of scoring makes a makes that trade look any better.
Right, man. So in the meantime, I think they have Dean Evason or Iveson as their interim coach.
Think he was another former Capital. So there's a lot of
Ooh.
guys associated with the Caps or former players of the Capitals all around the league. It's kind of funny.
It's fun to see. We had a huge game this week with the Vancouver Canucks versus the Chicago Blackhawks, and that was the retirement of the Sedins jerseys, the scene their jersey numbers.
Yeah, it was a great ceremony. It's really well done by the Canucks and the Sedins and everybody involved.
I agree. The ceremony was very well put together, and I think it really captured them, and it really captured who they are as people. Because a lot of some of the jersey retirements I've seen in the past, you kind of get it focuses on the player and their family. It's kind of like them on the ice. But with the Sedins, we know how like completely selfless they are, and like about everybody. It's about everybody else around them, and like they're so kind and giving and caring and all that. And the whole ceremony was about everyone they impacted throughout their careers. They had so many former Canucks, so many like former staff members and like former GMs and coaches, and they all came together to celebrate them. And even the Sedin speeches, like they weren't talking about themselves. It was basically them thanking everybody around them. So I think the ceremony captured it.
It was very cool that they started off the ceremony, their own speech, by, you know, giving their hearts out to Jay Bouwmeester and his family and wishing him well. It was a very classy way to start off. And yeah, when they went through, you know, naming everybody off who they played with and worked for, and they named coaches, even, you know, some not so great coaches that they had. But they went off everybody. They went through like the training staff, the arena staff. It was really cool for them to do that. And like you were saying, it just speaks to who they were as people. Very mm-hmm. humble and down to earth people, very real humans. Like they were just real people. Very
good guys. Basically. Yeah.
And one of the coolest things that I thought was said during that presentation, I think it was by, Kevin Bieksa. I don't know, maybe it was somebody else, but they were saying like the Sedin mentality will stick with that team moving forward. Yes. You know, they kind of installed that and instilled that in the locker room. Just that.
I wanted to mention that because we see how Vancouver is like they're in the middle of a rebuild technically, but they haven't exactly struggled as much as other teams would have. And what I really, really think is a huge part of that is the leadership and the mentality and the culture that those two instilled in the team and in the locker room. That is, it's the type of veteran leadership that a lot of teams going through rebuilds kind of miss out on when they dump off all their older players for new ones. That's, you know, the next group of Canucks coming up with Besser and Pettersson and Horvat, they've got this experience with these two absolutely unbelievable people, where they learned from them and they got to pass down all of that knowledge and all of that experience and just the way, what it means to be an NHLer that got put onto these younger players so that they learn it from the beginning. And it helps so much to get through the rebuild with a little bit more success and much quicker.
Yeah. It was really cool to have all of the former players there. Here's some stories from them about, you know, the Sedins, like an inside view and what it was like to play with them. And they all spoke about things like they were accountable in good times and bad times. You know, in the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals is probably the biggest example of that. In the poor times, that after they lost, you know, they were available for like an hour answering the same questions to the press about what went wrong and everything. And, you know, they just took it upon themselves to be leaders. And I think that's going to be huge for the Canucks to try and keep that around. And it's like you were saying, I think that they had a good opportunity to kind of pass that torch along the last few seasons they were around. And I think that we're seeing it pay off, that they were able to have time with guys like Bo Horvat and then pass him the captain's jersey. Was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, it was also so fitting that Horvat scored the first goal and the game winner, I guess, ultimately in that one.
Yeah. Yeah, and how cool was it that the Blackhawks were there?
I think I was reading that the Sedins actually requested that, or the team actually requested that.
Yeah, because they had that really powerful rivalry.
Yeah,
when the Sedins were at their peak,
they had that was right in the peak years of both teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool, and you know, they even had like the right type of banter about like with the Blackhawks too in their speeches.
Yeah, about Duncan Keith.
Yeah.
So it was great.
It's nice to see that like that mutual, like I call that respect in hockey when you're like bantering with opponents like that, especially ones with as much history as those two teams have.
Also, one other point that I wanted to make is that how great does Marcus Naslund look? He looks like he could just lace him up and get right back in
there. Oh yeah. Glad he's ready. He's going to be the Canucks' biggest trade deadline acquisition.
That man does not age. Absolute legend. And the Canucks redid that picture with all the captains, and they included Luongo. Still no Messier, though. It's a shame.
I find it endlessly funny whenever they have these big get-togethers with all these like historic icons and captains, and they're just never Mark Messier there. It's like, oh, you're missing somebody.
Yeah, no love lost there, I think, for sure.
So how about we move on to some suspensions from the week here? So we've got a couple of one very concerning incident and one almost it feels like it could be a turning point for the way the Department of Player Safety handles things.
Good.
So we'll start with the concerning one with Zach Kassian. He got suspended for 7 games for kicking Eric Chernak in the chest with his skate blade during
what
the Oilers Tampa Bay Lightning match. Yeah. I watched it live. I saw it happen live and I was like, wait, did that just happen? And then once the intermission rolled around and people put it on Reddit, I was like, okay, so that did happen. And he did just do that. That's a suspension.
And bozo play.
Yeah.
A guy that I work with was telling me that to me, it looked like this is him saying this, not me. To me, it looked like he put his skate on his chest to almost push off of him to get space away from him. I just shake my head like, that is not how you would do that at all. That's just like nobody would think to do that.
Yeah. Oh, also not to mention too, that the kick was over top of a teammate's head. Like
yes.
Josh Archibald was in that as well. And Kassian's leg was on top of him and he kicked over top of the player too. So you've also got the skate blade like over top of a guy's head and upper neck, basically. If I'm looking at the pile correctly.
Just what are you thinking?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, him and the team are arguing that, like, first off, it wasn't a very strong kick. Like, that doesn't matter.
That doesn't fucking matter.
And also that he was trying to get his leg free, which it wasn't. That wasn't the one that was held up. So there is no defense for that. This is a player with a long history of issues with the Department of Player Safety. And he got, well, we'll say the book thrown at him and compared to how long the suspensions being given out are. 7 games is a lot longer than we've seen in a little while.
Yeah, it just makes me think back to what Kassian was saying about Tkachuk. Like, you don't make that hit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, your credibility is completely gone after doing something like this. Like, it's just stupid. He deserved, like, I mean, I would have been okay with even more than what he got. It's just a stupid play. No place for that in the game to try and do that. That can go so wrong.
Oh, for sure. I mean, imagine, you know, what, say 5-6 inches, and then you're suddenly not on the chest pad anymore, and you're just in some guy's upper arm.
Yeah, like just like, why is that your instinct to kick? It's just stupid. Dangerous.
That would be your instinct with shoes on. But hockey players get that trained out of them, like, from a very young age. Like, these are weapons, you keep them down.
Well, it was like you were saying, like, Archibald was in between them. So, like, using your leg is harder to do than to just punch him. Why don't you just do that? Why don't you just use your hands?
Kassian likes punching things.
Yes, that's been demonstrated repeatedly. I don't get why he has to go to
face.
Trying to kick someone. It's just stupid. So yeah, definitely okay with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was Evander Kane.
Yeah, so he threw a bit of an elbow, got suspended for it, and he's kind of taken a bit of a Twitter, I don't want to say tirade, but he's taking a stand on the inconsistency that fans have been talking about for years about the Department of Player Safety. In terms of what gets suspended, how long, and none of it's, and this is in Kane's own words, none of it makes any sense. So he's, you know, this is like one day after we saw that Zdeno Chara cross-checked Brendan Gallagher in the face and neck.
Yeah.
And Chara got a $5,000 fine.
Yeah. There's no consistency. I think that Kane is right to point that out. I still think he should be suspended for that play, but
mm-hmm.
He's right in the sense that there's other plays that have happened that should have been suspended also.
Yes.
And I hope that this snowballs into a greater discussion, because he was talking about, you know, there's no way that the players would sign off on this, blah, blah, blah. So I think, like, that's kind of like, you know, alluding to the NHLPA getting involved.
Yeah, and we know there's, like, CBA is going to be open for discussion right away, if it isn't already.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to be the major part on the players, is finding a better balance here, because they're kind of in an awkward position where they have to argue for both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the consistency and the way that things are suspended needs to be, like, way more clear and way more set out, with proper precedent set, so that the players know what they can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, like, it's hard for them, because, I mean, they should at this point know not to put their elbow into some dude's face. But there's a lot of borderline things that happen that don't seem to really take into account context of the situation and prior incidents. And that's where all of this confusion comes from, that it's basically to the point where we just assume they have, like, a spinny wheel in their office that they spin for suspensions.
That's the only...
Like, the wheel of justice runs that department.
That's the only way it would make sense.
Yeah.
But then there would still be some sort of rule to it. It's based off of the wheel. It's not as arbitrary and random as it appears.
Yeah.
Like, we're trying to make sense of it by putting that wheel in there, but it's just a sad truth that there is no wheel, and it's just random, and there is no consistency. And one of the things that Evander Kane was talking about in his rant, whatever you want to call it, is that he was saying maybe we should have a third party involved in doling out punishments and suspensions. So that way there'd be no bias. I don't think that is going to ever happen. I think that the league will always want to be in charge of suspensions, and I think that they should be in charge of suspensions, but it was a neat idea from Kane.
I do too.
But yeah, I think that the league's place is to dictate suspensions, but I think they have to do a much better job. And I think that they do have to be more consistent, and that they have to not be so, for lack of a better term, butthurt at criticism, because they deserve it. And, you know, if the right thing to do in this Kane thing is to actually suspend Kane again, or fine him.
Well, they were looking at that. I think they were still they still had the case open on whether or not they're going to punish him more for calling the league out.
Because that would be consistent, is to suspend him, because they've fined coaches. We'll talk about that again in a second here. But when coaches criticize league officials, they get fined. So why should Kane get a free pass on this one? He should get fined again. So exactly. He'd get, and I think he would have to be happy with that, because it would show that they're remaining consistent on similar things, right?
Yes. One thing as a fan that's always really annoying is that the league, they put together those, like, suspension videos that never do anything. They don't say anything. And that's one of the hardest parts about trying to figure out what they're thinking, what they're doing when they make their decisions, is they don't actually explain why they're doing what they're doing. It's just like, here's a really poorly done play-by-play with no comparison to other things, no, like, reasoning and no rationale to what's going on. So we're just left guessing, basically.
Do you remember the Shanahan ones when he would do them?
I
thought those were good, but they never, like, referenced each other. So it was never like, as per this play, when we suspended this person, we have deemed that this is lesser degree of violence, so it will be less games, whatever.
We have access to so many videos, game footage, angles, and none of them get used to explain what happens in current incidents.
Yeah, I would say that I would think that they're 100% used in determining what suspension will happen, but they're not used to explain their findings. Like, they don't reference them. So people are left to interpret that on their own. And that's where people say, like, well, X player got Y number of games for this play, and it's identical, because they leave that out of their explanation. It opens it up to that criticism, where you have things like last season, when Pettersson got thrown to the ice and Matheson got a game, and then, like, the next day TJ Oshie got thrown to the ice, and you know, there was no, they didn't even look at it. So they just open themselves up to the situations like that when they don't explain it fully. I think if they did a better job at just explaining the rationale behind their suspensions, they'd probably avoid some of this criticism. Like, that would be a pretty easy fix, is don't change the system at all, just give a better explanation.
Yes. And as we're talking about this too, this is also on Kane's Twitter feed, that the hit that he made on Neil Pionk was similar in nature to one that Lawson Krause had on Zdeno Chara in the past. It was kind of in the same area on the ice, player along the boards, opponent comes in and hits them high. And Krause didn't even get looked at. There was no suspension, no fine, nothing.
Yeah, I think...
Or it wasn't it was on McAvoy, pardon me.
Right, I think Kane, you know, definitely doesn't do himself any favors by being a repeat offender now, that everything he does is looked at with a higher... what's the phrase I'm looking for here?
Degree of scrutiny.
Yes, yes, nailed it. A higher degree of scrutiny, just like players like Tom Wilson, right?
Yep.
Anything Tom Wilson does, they're more prone to get penalties in the game.
That's the thing. We see like those reputation calls we end up calling them.
Absolutely. Yes. That's kind of what I'm getting at here is Kane has the reputation of being a player that plays on the edge. I don't think anyone would describe Lawson Krause as a player like that. Maybe he did get involved in a questionable hit, but there's no way he's in the same boat as Evander Kane or Tom Wilson. I'm sure Crosby has thrown some questionable hits in his day, but he's not going to get looked at the same as like a player like Wilson or Ovechkin even. You know, it's just he's not known for that, so he can get away with it. And that's just always going to be the case. And while we're on this topic, I guess we should mention that Claude Julien got fined $10,000 for criticizing the officials after a game.
Yes. So as we were talking about before, like the league can do that when you criticize them. Like they don't like having their things called out. So they fined Julien $10,000 for calling out officials.
Just like Tortorella. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Little pee-pee
was it Boudreau earlier this year too?
Oh, probably.
Don't remember. It happened earlier this year.
Don't you dare publicly criticize us. We're above that.
The beatings will continue until morale increases.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. One thing about another San Jose-related thing is that Erik Karlsson's done for the year. He's got a broken thumb.
I had concerns about that contract when he signed it because he was injury-prone, and they're not doing any favors so far.
No. I mean, the only silver lining is, like, at this point, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, at least not in the middle of a playoff push.
They're not going to make playoffs. They've got so many guys out that it's like, what's one more guy in the pile? Throw somebody else up, pull somebody else up from the minors and get some experience, I guess.
Pretty much. See what they can do. We're moving into trades here right away, but see if they can unload a couple of players and help do a bit of retooling.
Blow up the team, get some younger players in there.
They're going to definitely have some big changes coming right away.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
We'll see how they can manage yet another on-the-fly rebuild.
Yeah.
So that's probably a good time then. We're sitting 1 week away from the trade deadline now. And we're just starting to see yesterday and today a whole bunch of trades picking up. So we'll just start with a quick recap of what the New Jersey Devils did yesterday, where they traded Andy Green was a captain there, right?
Yes, for a number of years.
Yeah, so longtime captain Andy Green got traded to the New York Islanders for a 2021 second and David Quenneville. Which I'm actually impressed they got that much for aging defenseman.
Yeah, I think he was going to retire like in the off season and then decided to lace him up again. So it's kind of funny that they were able to get something for him.
Yeah, and I mean, still like it's a decent defensive prospect, really, someone to help do something because the Devils are going to have a ton of roster spots. Like anybody who has like a hot streak can find their way onto the Devils roster and make an impact. So there's a lot of room for stuff like that, and if you throw a bunch of names at the wall, eventually some of them will stick.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I think this is like a weird trade for the Islanders because like I'm not familiar with them too much this season, but do they really need like a seventh D-man that badly? Do they have a lot of injuries this year?
I'm wondering if this is more of like a veteran thing for the team because they're performing about as well as they did last season in terms of standings at this point of the year. But I'm wondering if they wanted somebody who might be able to help the dressing room get farther into the playoffs.
Right. Oh, yeah. Pelech is hurt. He's on the IR. He's done for the year. So I think he's more of a defensive guy. So I guess bringing in Andy Green as a bottom pairing guy might make a little bit of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of a, seems like an overpay, but I guess every trade at the around the deadline can be argued to be an overpay.
We see the occasional overpay. It's you kind of have to pay for what you want, I guess, in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, with the Islanders too, I mean, I guess they've got Noah Dobson who's hanging around in the NHL off and on, and mm-hmm. a couple of decent prospects in the system. So they might just want someone around.
Just keep him around. He can slot in if they need him, and if not, he'll
exactly.
You know, ride you've the got pine.
A, I mean, we know Andy Green is a bit of a, he's been a pretty solid, steady defenseman. So there's nothing. It's probably not a bad thing to have that guy around Noah Dobson, who's more of an offensive-minded defenseman, help him develop a bit.
Yeah, and then the New Jersey Devils weren't done there. They also traded Blake Coleman to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for a 2020 first-round pick that was originally Vancouver's first-round pick in the JT Miller trade, and they acquired forward Nolan Foote. So Tampa Bay Lightning are down to 1 foot now.
Yeah, they're going to have to rebrand right away.
Yeah, so
I'm, oh my God, I am amazed at how much Blake Coleman got.
Yes.
So yeah. Nolan Foote is like one of the best prospects in Tampa's system. He's one of the best prospects in Canada. Like, he's been an amazing junior defenseman for years now. And they get a first round pick. So it's Vancouver's, it's that conditional one from the JT Miller trade. So if the Canucks don't make the playoffs this year, that the first-round pick is going to be a 2021 first-rounder. But it looks like they're going to make it, so they're going to get a late, mid-to-late first-round pick and a top prospect for Blake Coleman.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Quickly, though, I think Nolan Foote's a forward and Cal's the D-man.
Am I getting mixed up? Great.
Yeah, you're missing. You're mixing your feet up there, buddy. So
it's not my hands, my feet.
they're both really good though. So Nolan Foote is the younger of the two, so he's still playing in I believe the WHL. Yeah, so he's playing with the Kelowna Rockets. He's got 33 points in 26 games. Not too bad. But yeah, definitely a huge haul for the Devils. So I think that's what they need to do. You know, that this season has kind of shown that they're not progressing how they wanted to, and they need to just acquire picks because they're going to be pretty high on the, or pretty low, I guess. However you want to phrase it, they're going to be picking early in the draft. So
yeah,
the more picks that they can acquire, the better.
So which team is the new Oilers, the Devils or Sabres?
I wouldn't rule the Oilers of being...
The Oilers are still the new Oilers.
Yeah. they're still in there. But yeah, I think the Devils have definitely fallen off a bit. Even without Taylor Hall, they might still win that lottery.
Oh, maybe. That'll be pretty significant if they can break Taylor Hall's lottery streak.
Yeah, I mean, if
especially
Arizona...
with Arizona struggling again. I keep seeing his name in trade rumors again. Like, he's going to get traded again this season.
Yeah, I've seen that too, that rumor. That, I don't know, that would be kind of smart.
That would be pretty crazy.
If they don't end up making it, it would be good to flip him. That'd be tough, though, for Taylor Hall.
As we're still in this Nolan Foote for Blake Coleman trade here, let's look at it from the Tampa Bay Lightning side too. That it seems like Blake Coleman is going to probably what be like a midline forward for them. I can't imagine he'll be too far up. He's kind of comparable to like a Anthony Cirelli type, I think.
Yeah, probably
Alex
Killorn,
a couple of guys I have already. Coleman is actually like one of the best defensive forwards in the league, based off of his like goals above replacement and he's got this really, really amazing ability to kill penalties. And he's a bit of a specialty shooter. So they're kind of getting like another finisher for their midline scoring depth. and someone who's just going to be an absolute beast defensively and on the penalty kill.
Yeah, I think it's a big addition to their team, and their window is now. So they have to do everything they can to win. You know, after yep. last year, they've got to do something to shake things up. You know, maybe bring a guy in who's, you know, got a different mentality. Could be huge for them in the playoffs because they want to avoid being embarrassed again after last year's subpar performance.
Yeah, and at this point, there's got to be a bit more pressure on the GM, on the GM positions and the coaching positions to win now. So
absolutely.
That's where you end up seeing like a bold trade like this. That's they've identified a player they really want, that they need his skill set, and they have to overpay to get him because
mm-hmm.
they want to make sure they get him.
Yeah.
Luckily for Tampa Bay, their drafting has been so strong for years that they can afford to give up that prospect,
mm-hmm.
especially when they can get a player like Coleman for another season too. He's not actually a rental.
Yeah,
for
just,
as cheap as he is.
That. Yeah, he's got a pretty cheap contract. It's at 1.8.
1.8 for another year yet. So there's a bit of that in the value that's being given up for him.
Yeah, they get another season out of this. So it's always something to consider as well in the payment. But yeah, I mean, I think he'll be a good middle six guy for them. He'll probably play power play two for them.
He could be a good addition to their second unit.
The rich get richer.
Yeah, really. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts and responds to being on like a way better team in a more promising situation.
Yeah, I've just got the pregame on here now, but Tampa Bay plays Colorado tonight. I think that's going to be a huge game. Montreal Canadiens GM Mark Bergevin is actually going to be in attendance.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
So who is he looking at, do we think?
Sergachev. Sergachev for Drouin. But yeah, I think like he'll be looking for somebody for maybe like Tatar or I don't know who else. Maybe the big rumors that were a few weeks old now is that the Habs are going to be looking to shop Kovalchuk, Weber,
yeah.
Tatar, you know, who knows.
Yeah. I mean, see, I could see Kovalchuk getting traded to Colorado, to be honest. We see kind of they could possibly use another depth player for their second penalty kill, basically. At this point, Kovalchuk is
penalty kill
or power play.
Okay, Willie. Trying to put Kovalchuk on the penalty kill.
Yeah, sorry, I've been infiltrated.
Willie Desjardins on our podcast now. Yeah, I think that would be a good fit. You know, give them another offensive weapon besides their first line.
You could kind of give them like a specialty duo as well if you've got like MacKinnon feeding Kovalchuk for one-timers or something.
Ooh, keep going. Yeah, that would be interesting. I think Tatar would be a good addition to their team as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colorado is scary, and I think they're going to want to get somebody else. Just because that's what teams do. And then one more thing about the Habs quickly, because it's on my mind, is that Shea Weber was originally, the news was reported that he might be done for the season. And then it was downgraded to he might be done for a month to 6 weeks. And then it came out today that, no, he's practicing and he'll probably be playing tonight. Or tomorrow, rather.
That's pretty incredible. So I'm pretty sure that first thing was just like Nick Kiprios getting way ahead of himself.
Yeah, I think he probably got like fed some information that was not the greatest, and he just ran with it.
Yeah. So he actually did a half apology earlier today, where he's kind of like, he didn't actually apologize. He was just kind of like doubling down in the form of an apology. He was like, I swear I was using information, like reliable information that I was given. And this was what was thought at the time. Like, okay.
Yeah, because it was like the same.
That's a pretty big change.
Ankle or whatever that Weber's hurt before. So,
yeah.
And then it came out that it was only a sprain. I know like Sportsnet even did like a timeline of everything that happened. just basically got like a second opinion, I think. And then they were like, yeah, this is a lot less than we originally thought. And then the swelling's gone down a lot and he feels like he's ready to play. So I hope he's not coming back too early. But
what I saw is that he's not like 100%. He still like feels the injury, but the doctors have determined that he can't do any further damage by playing. So right. I think that's where the comfort in coming back, even though he's going to be in pain, even though it's still not going to be 100%, that he's not going to hurt it anymore. So they could still use his help. He might just kind of swap with Petrie for a little bit longer to take some minutes off of him while it still heals. But I mean, he should be good to go.
I hope he's good to go, because in one of my fantasy leagues, somebody dropped him when he got hurt, and I scooped him up, put him on my IR. And he could be a huge addition to my team going into playoffs. So I hope he's 100%. But the realist in me thinks that, yeah, you're probably right. He's probably going to be taking it as easy as Shea Weber does. Maybe playing, you know, less than 24 minutes a game or something like that. But yeah, I hope he's okay. And I'm very happy that it's not as career ending as was originally reported, because that would be sad. And then I guess we should probably mention the trade that happened today, hey?
Yeah, so there was one more trade that basically happened as we hopped on to start recording here, involving the Canucks and the Kings.
Canucks are buyers. What a crazy time.
I know, it's so weird.
So, Vancouver Canucks acquired Tyler Toffoli in exchange for Tim Schaller, a 2020 second round pick, and prospect Tyler Madden, who plays in the NCAA. What are your thoughts on this trade, John?
So I'm actually reading my thoughts originally before the price came out was going off of it was like a high draft pick, a top prospect, and a roster player. I was like, they give up that much for Toffoli? Because, I mean, he's a streaky sniper type, so he could very well just not really do anything for the next month and a half. But seeing what they've actually given up and comparing it to the other trades that have just happened over the last couple of days, weeks here, it fits right in, and I think the Canucks get exactly what they need. So I'm looking at another injury update from Canucks GM Jim Benning right here, that Besser has sustained a rib cartilage fracture and will be reevaluated in 3 weeks. Michael Ferland will miss the remainder of the season with recurring concussion-like syndromes or symptoms. So they need a winger. They had to do it now because they're losing players. Toffoli should be a pretty good fit for them. He's going to have immediate chemistry with Tanner Pearson, and it looks like they're going to be slotted in as Bo Horvat's wingers.
You're going to bump Louis?
How dare they?
Top line Louis?
So that should be a pretty good addition for the Canucks, especially as they get a playoff push. They need to find a way to be as competitive as possible in the Pacific, because it's so tight that every goal or every competitive advantage they can find is going to be necessary over there.
I think it's a good trade for both teams. The Canucks definitely need some more offensive power going into playoffs with Besser out of the lineup. They have been relying on Markstrom pretty heavily to save a lot of goals, and they need to have some more run support for him. So I think bringing in Toffoli in, you know, coming off that Hattie and that outdoor game will be hopefully a good addition for them. It's kind of cool, like you mentioned, that there's the LA connection with Pearson. I'm not sure if they actually, did they ever play together on a line? Do you know?
Toffoli and Pearson?
Yeah.
They were both part of the 70s line, weren't they? With Carter?
Ooh, yeah, I guess so. Well, then when are the Canucks going to get Jeff Carter?
That's got to be the next trade, right?
New winger. Or new center.
What are we going to see? Louis Erickson for Jeff Carter, probably?
Ooh, that would be a win-win, right? LA would get a defensively responsible, penalty-killing forward that can contribute some big minutes to their team. Yeah, that'll never happen. But yeah, I think for the Kings, it's another good move for them. You know, we saw them flip over Jack Campbell and Kyle Clifford to the Leafs and get you know, a younger player in Trevor Moore and a couple thirds and one conditional third. But, you know, that's kind of what they need to do, kind of like the Devils just acquire more picks and more younger players. I think that the biggest part of this trade that they're getting back is going to be Tyler Madden. He's been a monster in the NCAA this season. I think he's had a little bit of injury issues, but he's lighting it up. So that'll be a good prospect for them to have. I'm not sure how good LA's prospect pool is. I think it's actually pretty good. So
I think it's pretty good. They have a few high end guys here that should be coming up. So like Rasmus Kupari, Gabriel Velarde, who is going through a lot of injury troubles. He's kind of missed a lot of time last couple of seasons. Akil Thomas, Tobias Bjornfot, and Cale Clegg as well.
More prospects equals better. So, you know, just keep stockpiling them. The more likely one of them's going to become a stud in the NHL, right? So
exactly.
I think it's a good move for them. Smart to flip what they can now so that they don't lose everybody for nothing.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's, I'm always pretty, I always feel like these trades are pretty equal, but you know, we have to see what Toffoli actually does to see if this is worth it for the Canucks. You know,
that's my thing.
Do they make a good push into playoffs? Are they able to re-sign him? Is he a good fit with their team?
Yeah, so there is also a conditional pick on whether or not Toffoli re-signs, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's 2022. Is that still official? That's an official part of the trade?
Yeah, I'm seeing Pierre LeBrun here. Oh, yeah, and the Kings Twitter.
Okay.
Conditional fourth round pick 2022, yeah.
If Lierre Pebrun is reporting it, I believe. Okay, so what was that again? That conditional was a fourth?
Conditional fourth, correct.
In 2021?
2022.
Okay. All right. And that's the only condition is that he resigns. There's no like craziness. Like Toffoli must play in 17 games.
Kyle Dubas didn't make the trade, so I'm going to say no.
Or Armstrong in St. Louis. That man is a fan of conditions. That,
make it as confusing as possible and then spend too long figuring that out that you just say, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, that's what the Shattenkirk trade was. It was just like, yeah, okay. Whatever. Okay.
Stop adding conditions to things.
Sure. Yep, totally. Yeah, so that's all the ones that have happened so far. Do you have any predictions on what we'll see moving forward as far as
trades?
So
one of the things that I've been thinking about here is that we've seen the Florida Panthers are in the market for a defensive pairing for Aaron Ekblad, basically. They want someone to play alongside him. And a couple of candidates that I kind of like in that spot would be Alec Martinez and Brendan Dillon. I think they would be a pretty good, reliable defensive presence alongside there and someone that would really, really help solidify their defense.
Is one of the requirements that they also play wing?
They're going to have to. There's a requirement to being Florida Panther at this point.
Yeah. Matheson and Pisick, is that how you pronounce his name?
I believe so.
Both playing wing, because I guess they're just better at wing than they are defense. So yeah, I think that would make sense for them to pick up an actual D-man. Ooh. Sorry, Colorado just got a really nice goal against the Lightning, Burakovsky. Man, Colorado is scary. Sorry. Yeah, I think, you know, that would make sense for them to pick up somebody more defensively responsible. They've been having some challenges with putting games away because they're just getting scored on in rapid succession. So kind of stabilizing the blue line.
So I'm thinking Florida's going to make a huge push for one of those two.
That would make sense.
Especially as they are still kind of in the playoff picture. Like they're still battling with Toronto because Toronto's been struggling again big time. So it's totally realistic for the Panthers to swing up a little bit and grab a divisional spot.
Yeah, I think it's
they're currently only 2 points back of Toronto for third in the Atlantic. So if they can manage to get off a little bit of the cold streak they're on, get a better defenseman to play alongside Ekblad, that could go a long way to finding that reliable defensive pairing to help them close out games, like you said.
Yeah, I think another team that would be looking for the same thing would be the Winnipeg Jets. So I think that they're going to be perhaps in a bit of a bidding war for you know, players like that. Because like we talked about last week on the podcast, the Jets are going to want some more defensive help, I think. And they're, again, just like Florida, they're right there in the race. They could very easily swing up into playoff spot. Anything else that you think might happen? Do you think any other trades are
going to
happen?
I still think Edmonton is going to need to do something on the forwards.
Grab a winger.
I still would like them to grab Jean-Gabriel Pageau. I don't know if his offense is going to stick around, but I still think that he would be a really useful third liner and penalty killer. I like his energy. I like the style of player he is. And that seems like the type of person who would do well on a faster team like Edmonton and someone who would be very valuable in the playoffs.
Now, what would they have to give up?
That's the tricky one. I'm seeing how much the other forwards are getting, and I'm kind of like, maybe they shouldn't make a trade at all. But the Edmonton has currently got a plethora of defensive prospects. There's a couple that they could be totally willing to part with. I'm wondering if Ottawa, after how they've kind of gotten Anthony Duclair as a bit of a reclamation project, and he's kind of turned it around. I'm wondering if the Senators would have any interest in trying that with Jesse Puljujarvi as well, because we know he's kind of been
he'll be cheap
in trade talks for quite a while. He'll be cheap. He's not signed right now, but he can't play the season, but they might find value in bringing him back over next year.
Mm-hmm.
So some sort of package involving that and one of those defensive prospects, and see where that's a starting point anyways.
Yep. I think that the other buyers, you know, Vegas is always out there. See if they want to flip their entire draft lineup for Thomas Tatar again. That'd be kind of funny. But I don't know. I don't know if, you know, like the teams in first, like Washington or Boston, would be making any moves.
They never have to make trades, really.
No, I know Washington's right up against
the cap. They'll make small ones, but they don't have to make big ones, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, we'll get a depth guy. He's like a third-round draft pick. That's all they need to do, and they're usually good.
Yeah, I think Boston was rumored to be in on Kovalchuk and somebody else. Kreider maybe, but I'm not sure, you know, where they'll end up. I think it'd be interesting to see Kreider move somewhere. I'm not sure where he'll go, but I'll just pick a random team and go with Dallas. That's my prediction. Okay. Kreider to Dallas. I have nothing to base that off of, but I'm just
throw it out there.
They're still my pick for the cup. You know, from the beginning of the season, so I'd like to see him go there. And as a non-fan of the team, I don't really care what they have to give up. So make it happen.
One duo I'm really interested in seeing what happens is going to be Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton.
Ooh, yeah.
So we're seeing like rumors. We're not seeing anything definitive yet, but their availability is pretty much a given. Based on where San Jose is, and like these are two 40-year-old players who are kind of chasing a cup at this point because they're not going to be around too much longer. So I'm interested to see if a team on the cusp, maybe someone like Columbus who has a lot of roster spots open, would find value in making a bit of a trade to bring them both over at the same time for a couple players of depth, but also a lot of experience and leadership.
What would they even get for that? Like San Jose, what would be the price?
That one's hard because like Columbus doesn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, Columbus doesn't have very many picks.
No, they don't have much at all. That would be tricky for them.
Maybe like one one prospect and a pick. I don't know. Maybe it could be like
based
the Chris Draper trade and get a dollar.
Based on how the two have actually like produced this year, San Jose probably wouldn't get a whole lot for them.
No, yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they move, though, because that would be a good story. It'd be like the new Raymond Bork.
Yeah. Which one would get the cup first?
After 500 years, Joe Thornton. It'd be pretty funny. I don't want to see what that guy does if he wins the cup, though.
Oh, God. As long as he doesn't score 4 goals in the cup-winning game.
Could you imagine game 7?
Just that,
Jumbo
that
Joe.
Would top Obi Selly, I'll be honest.
That'd be pretty funny. Yeah, so I guess that's kind of all the trades we'll predict. I'll predict that Kreider to Dallas. I don't know what they'll give up maybe similar. Maybe they'll give up Honka. He's kind of in the same boat as Jesse Puljujärvi, so maybe there's a deal to be made there. I don't know. But is there anything else that happened this week in hockey that you want to go over?
I think that about wraps things up for this week. So, once again, if you enjoy what you're hearing, make sure to spread the word around to everyone you know. To keep up to date with the latest content, you can follow us on Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will be back next week to cover the trade deadline and more hockey talk.